Welcome to End of an Era, brought to you by Manscaped. Get 20% off Manscaped products when you use code TFT20.
Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present, with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Lob Podcast with These Football Times. It's 16 years since Arsenal's 2003-04 Invincibles won the club their 13th league title. Set against a landscape where the horizon suggested that there were many more to come, it was, however, unwittingly and incredulously the end of an era. Just how did Arsenal go from achieving the impossible to clinging on desperately to Champions League qualification within 2 years? I'm going to introduce our special guest in a little while, but this is a second edition of our End of an Era series. So first of all, it would be only right and proper that the brains behind this series is introduced first. So Stephen, welcome.
Oh, welcome. See how we're doing.
Yep, good, thank you. Looking forward to this. I'm a bit out of practice. I'm used to the videos at the moment. It's been a while since we've done a podcast, and I'm just looking at a blank screen, thinking there's not much coming back to me.
It's a bit odd all of a sudden, isn't it? I set up for kind of like a visual one, and then I thought, no. And then I've been able to rearrange the whole room on the basis of not being seen.
I mean, I've got glasses on because I'm struggling to look at screens. I don't even need glasses on, and yet I've kept them on. So I'm not even sure what that's about. Looking forward to this one, obviously, only our second episode, so it's still a relatively new series.
Yes, I think this will be a great follow-up from Paul McParland's episode on Everton, 69-70. You know, this is another team that, you know, has echoes of that team, really. You know, they could certainly play football. They had, you know, a great footballing engine to them. And, you know, I think no one, you know, anywhere could have second guessed that this team would not add more league titles to this one that they won.
I know who we have coming up. You know, and we've got Jeff coming up soon, so that, you know, that's probably not going to be a surprise as to which team we're doing. But you're right, this was such a jarring halt. It's incredulous when this was suggested, and you start looking at the sort of the bigger picture, if you like. It really is an incredibly jarring sort of halt to what happened.
Yeah, I mean, I think, as we were saying just before we came on air, was that there's a bit of kind of like sleight of hand with this subject matter. This team is that they still remained omnipresent to this very day. You know, they've recently won a trophy. So they've kind of stayed relevant, but that team that won that league title, it kind of worked almost as like a slow puncher. So they've not fallen off a cliff as such, but they just stopped winning league titles. So it's very, very different to, I think, some of the other teams that we will have coming up in the series, but also very different to Everton in that way that the Everton after 1970 didn't challenge for another league title for like 15 years. But here we are with this particular side. And there were years after this that they could have been there. They had some great teams and great players, and, you know, silverware has been won. But, you know, this league title just has seemed, with each passing year, to get a little bit more and a little bit more out of reach, to a point where it even became, you know, almost unrealistic to suggest that they could win it.
We'll come to Gary, because obviously it's interesting with certainly who you support, Stephen. Obviously it's interesting who Gary, without spoiling the surprise, is our second co-host as always, who Gary supports. And then obviously once we throw this team in the mix as well, it's going to be quite an interesting chat. Gary, Welcome. You okay?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you, mate. I'm sitting on the balcony here. It's a nice, cool evening. I've got myself a glass of wine. I'm going to talk about football with my mates. So I'm well set. And it's great to hear that, Steve, you know, although we haven't got video on this one, but he's wearing an Arsenal top in honour of the school. So well done, Stevie.
No, it's a locomotive Leipzig one. It just looks a bit Arsenal.
Oh. That's fine. You know, we'll take that on the nod. But you know, this is a fascinating subject, and you know, this was a team that you know, did something that no other team had done for, I don't know, 100 years or so, went through the entire league season unbeaten. And it should have been the start of a period of domination. And yet it's actually turned out to be the zenith of their achievement, and they disappeared away from that afterwards. So fascinating subject to have a great, and it could be a great discussion tonight.
It is. It absolutely is. Like I say, when you start reading into it and looking in more details, we have done for this, it, you know, the story is actually, you know, it's quite astounding. And that's on top of that is that, you know, the fact that it's a generation ago, which still takes me by surprise. Even before we started recording, I was still shocked.
Yeah,
tonight's guest is Mr. Seb Hutchinson, commentator, producer for the BT Sport and ITV. So we've got the very best in tonight. Seb, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Steve.
You okay?
Yeah, very good, very good. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, a pleasure. Like, as you know, as we've said, you know, the three of us are more than happy to chat on almost on a nightly basis about football. It's always good to get a different voice in and a different perspective, because otherwise it all ends up being about Liverpool, Chelsea and Hull City. Nobody wants to hear about that bit. So obviously it's Arsenal, it's the Invincibles. I suppose a little bit about yourself. You know, where's your interest in football come from originally? You know, why have you picked this Arsenal side for this particular series?
Well, I think to start with Arsenal, I think it's quite obvious why this Arsenal team sticks out more than any other, because of what they achieved in this season we're going to talk about. I also see this Arsenal team as very much, you know, Wenger's team. You know, while there were still some players such as Keown and Parler from the pre-Wenger era, everyone else was either signed or had come through the system under Wenger. So we often hear it labelled at him that he, you know, inherited that defence from the 98 title, that he struggled to buy good defenders. It's just not true. When you look at this team from 03-04, and it must be mentioned, the team that reached the Champions League final in 06 that didn't concede a goal in the knockout stages until basically about 15 minutes from the end of the final itself. But of course, above all of that, you know, it can't be stressed how big an achievement it was to go a whole league season unbeaten. You know, we think of all the great sides we've seen in England, not just before that season, but since then, you know, all the way up to the Liverpool side now. And none of them, aside from that Preston North End team back in the days of the dinosaurs, have remained undefeated during a campaign. And they, you know, Arsenal, they didn't do it in a dogged, functional and almost predictable manner. They did it in an entertaining, edge-of-your-seat manner, which made it all the more memorable. And if I think back to when I was younger, the Arsenal team then, you know, the George Graham team, they were not memorable in the way that they played, per se. They weren't famous for that at all. So what Wenger did to Arsenal as a club from his arrival is the reason why he'll always be remembered for Arsenal, as even aside from him winning the three league titles. I think it's always said about him, he was ahead of his time, but I think, you know, he revolutionized English football in a way that just seems normal now. You know, just everything about, not just things, you know, the obvious things that are always sprouted about diet and things like that, but just, you know, recruitment of players, the markets that he opened up. You know, we think the season before, I think Wenger arrived, I think there were probably two Frenchmen in the league, maybe Ginola and Cantona at that point. I mean, I dare you to try and name a number of Frenchmen who was in the league in about 95. And then you think 5 years later, there were probably 10, 12 Frenchmen. And you think how many Frenchmen are in the league now. And that market, the French league, as it were, is one of the biggest producers of players in world football. Some great players have come out of that country, even looking at the Champions League final just gone. So just opening up those markets, the way to look at the transfer market, and things always catch up to people. But from my point of view, just growing up, the timing of that team as I entered adulthood, the timing of Arsene Wenger being just a key part of what Arsenal were building to, and then him still being there after that and having to adapt to the changes in English football that began to catch up with him. As I said, you know, things, time keeps moving. Look what's happened to Mourinho, for example. Look what people say is happening to Guardiola. You know, things keep changing, new things happen, but you mustn't ever forget the people or the ideas that the new ideas were built on. That's the factor. And lots of managers would have been inspired by what he did in those days at the beginning.
It's a great opening piece, and it's something that I've sort of thought of on and off, but you know, very much, you know, all of us are here from the sort of pre 1992, you know, and sort of post 1992, you know, there's a generation that forget football ever existed before the Premier League. And Stephen, you know, it's something that I've thought of with regards to the Premier League. Can the Premier League be almost sort of pre and post Wenger? Is, you know, does he sort of sit astride the Premier League and the development of English football, as Seb's just talked about there? You know, does he sort of, is he that fault line that sort of divides, not the professionalism of English football, obviously it's been professional for a long time, but certainly how we think about football now?
I think he does. You know, I think he's the pivot. You know, if you think of how foreign managers were viewed when they came to English football, I mean, I'll go back to, say, Joseph Venglos at Aston Villa, you know, a visionary coach who was brought in to replace, to succeed Graham Taylor when he took the England job in 1990, and he was widely ridiculed. You can look at Christian Gross, who tipped up at Spurs with a tube ticket, and he was laughed out of English football by the press. You know, Wenger himself was mocked in his early days for being the professor. You know, this and there was a running theme to it. You know, and Wenger changed. You know, he broke down those barriers. He changed that concept, that caricature that the English press, the English written media, the tabloid media in particular would come up with for foreign influences. And yes, you know, Premier League football. You know, you can point to the season before Wenger came, that there was the first inklings of it. You know, the arrival of Dennis Bergkamp at Arsenal under Bruce Rioch was a cataclysmic change, you know, in the best possible way. But it needed someone like Arsene Wenger to repaint the landscape, basically, and he did. Everything that Seb said there is absolutely correct. You know, the vast majority of foreign players prior to Wenger's arrival that came into English football would come from Scandinavia, predominantly. You know, so that very early Premier League, late first division influx of Norwegian players, for instance. You know, at Liverpool we had Jan Mobley, the Dane. You know, there was that strain. You know, but players like that who were seen as being cultured were a rarity, almost. You know, you can point to Ipswich and Arnold Bjorn and Franz Tyson. These were just brief glimpses and sparks of these type of players, but the vast majority that would come into English football were often hardworking. You know, they were almost British players in spirit. But this, you know, Wenger came in and so much changed. So many positives came into the English game, and I think he did change that attitude. Is that for every foreign coach that came after Wenger, you know, there wasn't that sense of the pitchforks were raised and the burning of effigies. It was none of that. So even the ones that came and didn't really succeed, you know, there wasn't the lambasting of them. It was just seen as a, you know, it was something that was tried. It didn't quite work, and you know, football moved on so quick that, you know, the coming and going of a foreign coach was seen as no worse than the coming and going of a British coach.
It's, I mean, you know, Gary, I'll, two things there. You know, first of all, you know, are you in agreement with the guys with regards to sort of Wenger's standing in the development of the English game?
Yes, absolutely. No doubt about it. This is a guy who I mean, almost literally revolutionised English football. So, as you know, Steve was saying, not only in the case of, you know, how should we say this, refueling, but also in tactical awareness and the way the games should be played and a more professional approach to football. So, yes, massively, massively. Second question, please.
Second question. It's not more of a question. It's more a little bit of context for us. Is the, you know, we mentioned at the beginning how difficult it is to go a season unbeaten. You know, we've just seen, although we've seen a season unlike any other season as it happens, but, you know, the Liverpool side that seemed to be marching almost inexorably towards an unbeaten season. But the sheer level of consistency to go a season unbeaten is such an incredible, you know, people talk about Manchester United's treble achievement. And, you know, there's always, people always come up with, this is a better achievement, this is a better achievement, and so on and so on. But in terms of context, to go 38 games unbeaten is the ultimate achievement.
Yeah. You know, Amy, just, you know, here's a team we're talking about last season, Premier League season, Liverpool won the title by, I don't know, 20. I mean, it might have been 60 or 70 points because Fresh Air was second, third, fourth, and fifth. And yet they didn't to achieve what Arsenal achieved in the Invincible season. So, yes, and you can look back at other Arsenal teams like the double-winning team of Bertie Mee and Don Howe, for example, and say, OK, that might have been a better team because they won two trophies. But there's something unique, I mean, absolutely unique about going a 38-game Premier League season and not losing once. You know, yeah, people might argue and say, OK, well, they didn't win that many. They won 26 games and drew 12. But they didn't get... They also were top scorers in the league with 73 goals that season, and they conceded the least number of goals with 26. So even though people might argue that, well, they won 12, but they only won 26 games and drew 12. That's a fabulous achievement, and, you know, and it's something that I'm sure, I mean, Liverpool have just sort of demonstrated the fact that it probably won't be replicated for, I don't know, probably in my lifetime.
I was going to say this, but I would agree. I was, you know, you're sort of wondering, you know, like you say, Liverpool, you know, there was this potential, but again, it's something that has to go 38 games. You know, you're never going to know until the last game is played. You know, and it did look for a while.
It just shows how difficult it is, Stu, because, you know, Liverpool were, you know, have been far and away the best club, the best team in English football in the last season. And they couldn't do it. They couldn't do it. But the Arsenal team of the Invincible season 2003-2004 actually did that.
And doesn't it really show that the league is the marker for who the best team is in a season?
Of course it does.
Because cup competitions, look, Arsenal won the FA Cup and they barely finished it, just about finished in the top 10 of the Premier League. And you look at Europe, what can happen in Europe, in terms of, you know, on their day, Lyon can beat a Man City side. You know, Liverpool can be eliminated. When we talk about this Arsenal team, they got knocked out of all the cups, didn't reach any of the finals. The league is about your consistency, the overall quality of your squad. You know, we always talk about the team, that, you know, we say the starting 11 of that team, who was the team? But they don't play every game. So it's important that your support players make up for that.
Yeah. And, absolutely right, and you can fluke a cup win. You can even fluke a European or Champions League, as they call these days, win. If you can get an easy draw to the semi-final and a couple of good performances, you cannot fluke a league title. You cannot fluke an unbeaten league title.
As we get into this discussion with Arsenal, then, and, you know, we come to this season, Seb. You know, obviously, you know, we've talked about Wenger. We all have an opinion on him, you know, and in the wider context of the game as well, not just within this particular side and this season. But in terms of the actual season, then, you know, with regards to, you know, the players that were in the squad for that season, the strengths of that squad, and, you know, weaknesses, because obviously there must have. obviously there must have been, weaknesses were clearly there if this side, I'm not saying to replicate an unbeaten season, but if they couldn't then go on and win another league title, then clearly there were elements within that side and that squad that weren't quite right.
Well, I think what makes this quite unique usually is that what happens is a side wins the league and then we say they need to sign players to build on that and continue to dominate. But Arsenal had lost the league title to Man United the season before that. But at the start of that 2002-03 season, Wenger actually said, based on the fact that Arsenal had gone the previous campaign when they were champions, they were unbeaten away from home. And he started that 2002-03 season by saying that, you know, he believed that this side could go a whole season unbeaten. And that was the way of Wenger. He was always quite positive. He always believed things could happen. He always believed that dreams could come true. And he would tell his players that, and he would let them express themselves on the pitch. And he would tell the players these things were possible. I mean, often players don't think in that manner. They just take each game as it comes because of the relentless nature of it all. But he believed that they could go that season unbeaten. Then what happened was, I think, they lost in October to that famous Wayne Rooney goal against Everton. And, you know, within a couple of months, you know, his dream had been shattered. But the thing with dreams is you've always got a chance to earn them beyond that. And before the 2003-04 season, I think he just felt this team can go and achieve something special. And that summer, they made one major signing, really, as far as what would be useful for the season ahead. And that was Jens Lehmann came in. And David Seaman left for Man City, I think. And that was it. That was it. We think of teams that have won the leagues in the past and they signed those big players. But the majority of that Arsenal team had been there a fair few seasons already. So they were almost warming up to this point. And like you mentioned before about teams that win doubles and everything else, but of course the unbeaten season would go far beyond that. But this team, at the start of that 2003-04 season, they were confident that they could do well in this campaign. But there was a spanner in the works at the beginning of the season with Roman Abramovich's takeover of Chelsea. And Chelsea went on a splurge. They signed about 13 players. Incidentally, most of those players that they signed weren't actually part of Jose Mourinho's title-winning team 2 years later. But that's beside the point in the fact that it suggested what was coming over the hill and the problems Arsenal had had that summer. The fact they signed one player and Chelsea signed a glut of players suggested a problem that they were going to have, especially the way that Arsenal recruited players. You know, they signed players, basically tried to pick players out of markets that people hadn't looked at before. Well, everyone was starting to look at those markets. You think of Drogba, you think of Essien. These are sort of signings that Arsenal would certainly have been interested in at the time, but they just couldn't compete. Obviously, I'm jumping the gun a little bit. So we look ahead to this 2003-04 season. And the team, as I said before, they had players who had been at the club for a fair few seasons and were almost hitting the peak and a peak point in their career. They weren't young players, most of them. They were right in their prime. Players like Patrick Vieira and Sol Campbell, Ashley Cole, who was one of the younger players in the team at that time. World Cup winner in Gilberto Silva. You know, older heads like Ray Parlour, Martin Keown, and of course, Dennis Bergkamp. And then the man, the icing on the cake, Thierry Henry, supported by his mate Robert Pires. And we can go through the whole team and pick players apart, but I think Henry is the key to this team in the fact that he played every game bar one. So players were being chopped and changed. There were a lot of suspensions, but he was one of the main constants in that team. And to have your striker, your fearsome striker, be fit for the entire campaign, that is a key point for any team to do well. And I think that was crucial because Patrick Vieira got injured in the previous campaign, a key point in the season, and that harmed him. Because Arsenal, while the squad proved important, they didn't, it wasn't a huge squad, that the depth wasn't there. I'd almost make it comparable to this current Liverpool side in that if this current Liverpool side had had three or four big injuries to their big players for the majority of the season, the players coming in are not up to the, it's not the same as what City had in depth, able to bring in world-class players in that regard. Beyond the first 11, it's not up to the same quality. And Arsenal had that same issue at the time, but they were lucky with injuries to a key player like Henry. I think that was bigger than anything else, in my opinion.
It's funny, isn't it, Steve? You know, sort of, you know, Seb said there, you know, you need, I suppose, to go, you know, a full season unbeaten. You do need that little bit of luck at times. But as Seb's sort of gone through that side, and you know, and you look at the names, and you know, there is that almost perfect blend of youth, experience, and yet there's also, you know, sort of quality that just runs right through the side. And again, as we progress, it's something that I still seem obviously struggling to get my head around, is how that side there just cannot do it again. It just cannot sort of regain a league title. Is, you know, when you listen to the names that are read out there with the manager that they have, it just makes the story even more incredulous.
Yeah, I think what it is beyond this season is that it's that altering the landscape, the arrival of Abramovich, the arrival of Mourinho, that changes the landscape so much. But you also had to factor into that as well, was that Wenger's own propensity to constantly revamp his side. He was never one to sit still. I mean, you only have to look at, say, the difference in the squad that wins the double in 98 to what this side is. And it's only 6 years. And so many teams will have, you know, a sizable element of players that are still there from 6 years ago, you know, through history. But there was only a couple of names really that were still around. You know, he constantly, you know, revamped and readjusted his side. And perhaps one of the guilty parts of this is that maybe things changed a bit too much too quickly after 2004. But going back to some of the stuff that Seb said there, you know, that 2002-03 season, you know, is absolutely pivotal in this. And yes, that statement of intent to say this side of mine can go a full season unbeaten, and then to go and do it. What you had there is that there was an element to this Arsenal side that does kind of go, it falls under the radar, and it's the mental strength and the constitution that they had to come back from a blow like that. Because it wasn't just that kind of fell flat for them. That 2002-03 season, they were top of the league for 5 months, from around about mid-November to around about mid-April. And for a long time, they seemed nailed on to win the title, and they kind of gave it away. You know, yes, every team has to win the league title. You know, they always earn it. A great believer that sometimes there are seasons where more than one side would be a valid champion. You know, you can look at not the season just gone, but the one before, where Liverpool, you know, finished on 97 points or whatever it was. You know, so there's been other, you know, instances of that happening for me.
Well, Stephen, just to cut you off, I think just a few years before that, Man United's treble winning season, they won that league campaign, I think, with 1 point maybe ahead of Arsenal, 79 points.
That was another one, because I think if I have it rightly, Arsenal were top of the table going into the penultimate game, and they lost against Leeds. So they'd had these blows where, yes, 99, they, you know, because I was always a great believer that they played better football in
88-89, they were good as well.
They were as well. But I believe that they played better football that following, because that was the year where they lost that FA Cup semi-final, where Bergkamp had the last-minute penalty and Giggs went on the winding run to win it in extra time. So that treble that Manchester United won could have been a double, domestic double for Arsenal very, very easily. So they'd had that disappointment in 99, a double disappointment, and then, yes, they won the FA Cup in 2003, but they'd kind of fumbled the title again. So for every success that Wenger was having, there was a should have been to go along with it. So to absorb all that, but then to come back even stronger in 2003-04, I think that mental capacity to do that, so not just do it unbeaten, but to come back from the disappointment of throwing the title away, is something that is not considered quite so much.
It's funny, I'm interested, you know, and obviously it's great, you know, that you're with us, Gary, as always. But this is where I'm interested in your perspective. Obviously, as a Chelsea fan, you know, we've mentioned, you know, the impact of Abramovich, Mourinho at this time, and obviously with yourself as being a Chelsea fan, how did you view Arsenal at this point in time?
Yes, I suppose at the start of the season, you couldn't expect us to beat Arsenal because they'd done something that no other club, in my living memory, and many, many, many years before my living memory, had ever done. Going to a league season and beating was ridiculous. And I can't remember the date when they played Manchester United in the famous stroke, infamous, depending on which way you look at it, Rooney died for the penalty. And the game that sort of, as my daughter tells me many, many times, mortalised Arsenal and gave Chelsea the title. And it was a strange situation because, as Seb says, yes, okay, Chelsea bought a lot of players very quickly, but it was probably equivalent to what other clubs had bought players over for a 6 or 7, 8 year period before that. The Arsenal team that won the title as the Invincibles, we're almost sort of cocooned in a state that you can't criticise them. You can't minimise what they achieved because no team has ever done that before. And the very fact that they sort of fell away afterwards only emphasises the success that they had and magnifies the achievement that they had in that season when they went undefeated. And, so Chelsea finished behind Arsenal in the 2003-2004 season by, I think it was 11 points. And the following season, Chelsea finished 12 points in front of them. So there was a 23-point swing in that season. Between those two seasons, and you have to think, well, was it the majesty of the Arsenal team in 2003-04, or was it sort of, I don't know, the dramatic decline of the team afterwards? And I know this series is about the end of an era, and it's strange to say that you know, Stevie's team, you know, have won the league title by a country mile, and you can't imagine Liverpool finishing, 11, 12 points off the top of the league next season. But the achievement Arsenal had in that season and the way they sort of fell away afterwards, it's almost in that same magnitude.
It is a great analogy, Gary, when you think about Liverpool, where they are at the end of this season and where will they be next season in terms of context. But I suppose, again, coming back to you, Seb, we know what happens. We know how this plays out. But, looking back retrospectively, was there any signs, any suggestions, any hints at all that the famine of sort of the Premier League trophy would still be in existence even today at the end of that season?
At the end of that season, I think, just to go back to the point I was saying before, I think the signings is the key point. Because you've already touched on the fact that Wenger kept revolutionising his side. But the players, when he was bringing players in, they weren't players that everybody was after when he was bringing them in. They were players that had either fallen out of favour at clubs, who he'd worked with before, maybe at Monaco. And they were players he brought in and then they improved and had their best years at Arsenal. And other teams were in for them and everything else. But you think that it felt from this sort of point, and I'd say maybe a year or so before, that Arsenal weren't really going in the market to compete at the top level for the best players. They just weren't able to do that. And people kept saying he has to keep pulling miracles out of the market to stay in touch. But you think that season, they signed Reyes in the January transfer window, and then they signed, Robin van Persie in about April or May. That's near the end of the campaign. But teams usually now, they don't make, you know, by one player statements. They usually bring in three or four players into a transfer window. If you're going to keep on improving and win league titles season after season, you have to keep bringing in players and improving the team. But I think Arsenal reached a point where they had a team of world-class players, and actually to improve on that is very difficult. And you think of teams, I'm trying to think of an example now, but you think of, say Spurs now, you know, they've got a player like Harry Kane up front, and you think, okay, other teams are after Harry Kane. If Spurs were going to lose Harry Kane, they're going to find it very difficult to find a player as good as him and compete to get a player as good as him. They can't bring in any players as good as him now because they'll find it tough to start instead of him. And I think Arsenal had that problem. If you were a good player and you thought, should I move to Arsenal? Am I going to get into the team ahead of Henri, Pires, whoever else you want to say, Vieira, Cole, whoever? You might not get in the team. So you might you think, oh, do you know what? I'm not going to move there yet. Say a young Cristiano Ronaldo at that point in time, say 2003, when he's 18 years of age, and Arsenal would have certainly loved to have had him at the club at that time. Would he have wanted to go to Arsenal that time? He might have thought, well, do you know what? I might not get in the team at this point in time. I might not get in the side. And also, at the beginning of the 03-04 season, if I'm getting my dates correctly, Arsenal had Yaya Toure on trial in a friendly at the start of this campaign. And I'm not suggesting that, you know, that Arsenal made a mistake. They should have brought him in or whatever you want to say, but the sands of time always say that for you to maintain dominance, you have to keep bringing in good players into your team and improving your team year in, year out, because other teams around you will do the same. Chelsea, as you know, Gary mentioned, they did spend all that money in that summer of 03, but the next summer, they brought in a whole new team as well. And most of the team that won the title in 04-05 were players bought in that summer of 04, the key players of the team, a lot of their Porto players, lots of Drogba. These are important members of the Chelsea team to make them even better, because they, in many ways, they came pretty close to this 04 season, because if they'd beaten Arsenal in the two games against them, I know it's hypothetical, but if they'd beaten Arsenal in the two games they played them, they would have won the league in 03-04, because that's the point swing difference. So they weren't that far behind in that regard in many ways. But it just felt to me, even at the time, it didn't feel like Arsenal was starting a dynasty. It felt like they were on borrowed time because they had a brilliant team, but you just didn't see it still. You just didn't see a 5-year plan ahead of that. You just didn't see who were going to be the players that were going to displace Henri and Vieira. You know, who were the next ones coming through? I think, thinking back, you know, our memories, when we think about these times, we always think hypothetically, and we think, well, you know, Fabregas signed for free in that summer, but, you know, he was 16 then. So there's... so it's like...
I know what I was doing at 16.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, yeah, you know, he was a first-team player in Arsenal by the next season, and I don't care how good you are, title-winning teams rarely have 17-year-olds in their team. You know, it just rarely happened. Even Messi at 17 wasn't, you know, the most important player in that Barcelona side. So that, I think, summed Arsenal up in many ways, is that they just couldn't improve or replace on this team. And the other team started swarming around their players and they're finding it difficult. And of course, the elephant in the room is the stadium move, which sucks the club's coffers dry, really, in terms of transfer recruitment. They went for the long-term investment and thought, if we put the money into the stadium, then this will see big returns and, you know, we'll be competing again. But football just moves so quickly. That's not really been the case. That's not how it's worked for Arsenal, because Man City came on the scene and other clubs had owners who were able to pump money in. And so that advantage that Arsenal thought they would get over time hasn't really transpired.
It's great being a Hull City fan, because all these problems that you guys have at the top end never bother me. They never faze me. I never have to relate to them. at all. I'll worry about them. But in terms of, you know, being a part of or being a fan of you know, such great iconic moments, iconic teams, you know, iconic dynasties, if you like. And, you know, Stephen, from your perspective as a Liverpool fan, you know, listening to what Seb was saying there, and you had that tradition with Liverpool where, you know, with the boot room, and we've talked about it so many times, you know, from Shankly all the way through, and it seemed relentless. You know, Liverpool's winning was relentless, relentless, relentless. And as Seb's pointed out there, you know, there was a, you know, it didn't look like a five-year plan at the time. Now, obviously, Liverpool were sort of more or less in the middle of their sort of Premier League famine, if you like. Could you, as a Liverpool fan, you know, looking back, recognise what Seb was saying there? You know, did you look at Arsenal and think, they could potentially be heading down a track that we did?
I don't think I saw it that way at the time. I probably thought that there was another 2 or 3 years of this arc to go for them before it slipped away. You know, a lot of those players were late 20s, approaching 30. You know, some of them were over the other side of it. And if you think about some of the players that they were releasing and letting go, you know, it was players that were on the periphery who'd done well for them in previous seasons. So it was kind of Wiltord went and Parlour went, and there were players that you fully understood were going. You know, Martin Keown, 37, 38, was allowed to go to Leicester. So it felt, it was still a sense of evolution. You know, they were even allowed, you know, they were even, you know, able to turn around to a player as talented as Carney to say, yeah, no, we've had the best out of you that we can. Off he popped to somewhere else. And he was only about 27, 28 at the time. So it was a case of, I think, in retrospect, if the nucleus of the side could be kept together, that there was going to be another 2 or 3 years of this Arsenal side before. So this in essence, on the Liverpool scale, it was their 87-88. You know, so there was still going to be an 88-89, 89-90, even into 90-91, where we challenged for the title until Dalglish went. So I would have had them there on the Liverpool scale. So I still felt there was more to come, but yes, on the horizon you could see problems coming. But I think part of the issue was that within a year they start to become a club where players have picked off them. You know, 12 months after they win this title, Vieira is plucked away to Juventus. The expectation that Hornery was off to Barcelona, which was a transfer that seemed to be 2 or 3 years in the making. You know, he was fully expected to go after the 2006 Champions League final, but I think the way that Arsenal lost it and losing it to Barcelona delayed his move for a further year. But to lose like Ashley Cole to Chelsea, you know, that was a big, big marker. That was a big line in the sand for this Arsenal side. But I think in the summer of 2000, and four, never saw some of these issues coming for Arsenal as quickly as they did. Yes, they were coming, but I thought it wouldn't be as quick as it happened.
It's such a great conversation. Honestly, I have the easiest job in the world. It's brilliant listening to you guys and just asking questions as I want to know something. I'll find something out. Obviously, Gary, again, you know, with the link with Chelsea and Ashley Cole. But do you think it was almost too easy for, you know, both Sam and Stephen just mentioned it there. Was it too easy for teams to come along and take these players away from us? You know, should it have been more difficult? I'm not sure if that's the correct phrasing of the question, but, you know, should it seemed, as the guys have mentioned, a little bit too easy to almost cherry pick this side apart.
I guess I'm going to rephrase the question you asked.
Okay.
And this is sort of, should players have been more inclined to stay at Arsenal? Which I think is what you're saying. And I think the answer is that they saw what was happening. I mean, you know, Arsene Wenger was a genius. I mean, let's not beat around the bush. Now, this is a guy who kept a club at the top of the English top table of football when building a new stadium and had to sort of finance that as well. And the transfer dealings he did were remarkable, absolutely remarkable. But strangely, you know, I mean, the Ashley Cole transfer is a real sort of microcosm of the situation, because Chelsea had been courting Ashley Cole for a while, and you know, okay, let's be honest, let's not beat around the bush, but you know, if you think clubs never make contact with players they want to buy before they make a bid, grow up. That doesn't happen. They always make contact with players and have conversations and see if there's an interest and talk to agents. That's how these things work. But the reason Ashley Cole moved from Arsenal to Chelsea was because he wanted to win more things and earn more money. And he could do that far more easily at Chelsea than they could at Arsenal, because Arsenal didn't have the financial power Chelsea had. And also, there was a situation where Arsenal was seen to be crazily after the 2003-2004 season to be in decline. And they were. You know, where they should have been, that triumph, that unique triumph should have been a stepping stone, a launching pad for a pitch domination. It was actually the zenith of their powers. And afterwards, they fell away badly. And the reason players left there was because they were, A, they wanted to earn more money, and B, they wanted to win more things.
I mean, I've got a question now, and it's a point we were going to come on to, and again, you know, this is, as we've been chatting, Seb, it's something that I was thinking. To, you know, clubs have to remain hungry, and they need to strive for the next challenge. Do you think that, you know, winning the league, you know, is, you know, people say it's the bread and butter, and everybody's rightly said so tonight. You know, it's the ultimate in deciding who is the best team, you know, that particular season in that country, but going a season unbeaten almost made any league achievement almost superfluous, because it was so the ultimate achievement to have. You know, Liverpool can still go for it, Manchester City can still go for it, every club apart from Preston, who I don't think will for a while, or Arsenal, can still go for it. Do you think that almost the hunger for a league title had disappeared with that record, and it all became about success in Europe?
No, I don't think that's the case at all. I think when teams, I mean, we often say that teams might lose their hunger after winning the league, but I think what happens more is that, one, the opposition maybe cotton on to the way you did it before and know how to make your life a bit more uncomfortable the next time they see you or the next time they meet you. You know, title defences are tough to do. Players, I think, also... It's such a mental relentlessness to competing at the highest level. If we look at the way this Bayern side have won their treble this season, and in 2020, the way they play football at that sort of intensity, high line, not giving the opposition a second, and being switched on for the entirety of a game, you know, week in, week out, to do that, it takes a lot out of any team to do that. That's why we're talking about refreshing teams. You bring in a new face, and what a new face does is it makes everyone else get back on their toes again. So, oh, okay, all right, no, we go again, yeah. This guy could take my place in the team. Or, okay, we're going down a new avenue. It's a little bit fresh. It's a little bit go again. I think the hunger's always there, but it's more than, it's the mentality of, oh, no, I really need a rest after this, but we go again. Okay, we have to go again. And then all of a sudden, you lose your unbeaten run. And then, like somebody mentioned before, you know, the invincibility is pierced. And I think quite soon after that, they had a dramatic defeat to Liverpool. I think Neil Mellor scored in added time in another dramatic game, another dramatic defeat for Arsenal. And they started probably to question themselves. And there was a game, I remember, around the time when they faced Chelsea at home. And it, even at the time, I remember thinking, this is a game that is almost a point in time for Arsenal, which we think has become so regular now. But at the time, Chelsea outplayed Arsenal in the game at Highbury. I think Robin was fantastic in that game. And Arsenal somehow managed a 2-2 draw. Henry, of course, an important part of that. And the way they celebrated, you know, 2-2 draw at home to Chelsea, they almost celebrated that draw like it was a win, like it was a victory. And I think I felt, even at that time, I remember feeling at the time, they feel they're below this Chelsea side. I think they feel that this Chelsea side is stronger than them, and they're hanging on to their coattails here. And now we think back to some of the things that Arsenal have celebrated since then, you know, top four finishes and FA Cup wins and all this sort of stuff. But, you know, you think that team just a few months earlier had almost gone 50 games unbeaten. 50 games unbeaten. Sorry, my daughter's come in.
That's all right. I'm all right. I don't think she agrees with what you had to say.
No, she hasn't. Hold on, let me just take her out. Hold on.
That's right, don't worry.
It's okay.
I mean, obviously, we've got our next guest lined up right there next time, for next time, haven't we, Stephen? That seemed like quite a sensible comment there. Sort of while Seb's dealing with the dissenters in the background, or the Tottenham fans, as we know them as, you know, in terms of, you know, what Seb was talking about there, and almost... You know, it was almost a psychological decline before a technical or an ability-wise decline. Does that make sense?
Yeah, everything about Wenger's Arsenal always seemed to be down to the psychology of the situation. You know, either they were up riding the crest of a wave, and I mentioned the strength of character and that you know, a kind of resilience to bounce back from those disappointments. Because, yes, you know, they won 3 league titles in a 7-season span, but there could have been 2 more. You know, and it's a body blow to lose a league title in such close circumstances. And for a team to come back and win it after, quite a devastating blow, it is, you know, a strong thing to do. And it's not something that anyone... I can't imagine even Arsenal fans, you know, would say that it was something that they associate with that side of theirs is this mental strength. But within that, they had a great fragility as well. You know, that defeat to Manchester United in 2004-05 that stopped that unbeaten run at 49 games, it tends to go forgotten that the first 10 games that 2004-05 season, Arsenal won 9 out of the first 10. And they did look like they were going to run away with it in an even more emphatic manner than they had done the previous season. But once they lost that game to Manchester United, they were made to think about themselves. They were made to self-analyse, and maybe this is where the concerns, the anxieties of what, you know, lay in their squad and the realities of what they would have to do to stay on top came home, and that's where they've kind of gone rabbit in the headlights somewhat. Because you could probably point to, you know, I often point to Liverpool's, you know, zenith of being that 5-0 against Nottingham Forest, and things were never quite the same after that. Even though they went on and won a title, they lost the next one by, you know, 60 seconds or whatever it was. You know, there was certainly, you know, a fault line from there. And for Arsenal, they were never the same team again after that defeat to Manchester United. And that, again, doesn't come down to the ability of that team, because that team still had Henry, it still had Perez, it still had Vieira. You know, they were still magically gifted, you know, the introduction of Van Persie, of Fabregas, of Reyes. They still had all the components there to be successful and a side that were capable of defending their title that season and even beyond. Yet here comes that sense of doubt, and that defeat to Manchester United is kind of like a hammer blow that made a profound reverberation on Arsenal that is still kind of there to this day.
Everything okay, Seb? Have you thrown out the Tottenham fans?
Yeah, go on. She heard this chat about...
Brilliant.
You know, she draws at home to Chelsea and she thought, what are you talking about?
Gary, I suppose, you know, all these questions seem to come to you today from a Chelsea perspective. I'm really sorry, but obviously I'm interested in, you know, in sort of Chelsea's overview of this Wenger side as well, because I think it's a really interesting perspective of it. Did you sense a mental fragility with this side?
Yes, absolutely, I did. It was like falling from a mountain, and you know they, as I said, there was the following season after they'd finished 11 points clear of Chelsea. The following season they were 12 points behind Chelsea. That was a 23-point change. The year after that, they were 24 points behind Chelsea, finishing fourth. And the year after that, they were 21 points behind the title winners. This isn't a gradual decline. This is falling like a mountain. And, you know, I mean, there was a thing that Chelsea fans were used to say about Arsenal at that sort of, not 2003-04, but in sort of the 3 or 4 years afterwards, that's, it was like playing the under-12 girls French team, that they were always fragile, they were mentally, what's the word I'm looking for, not determined enough to win their games. And this is the craze, this always sort of baffles me. There's a team that was so resolute in that invincible season that fell away so quickly, emotionally, not tactically, but sort of in a way that they almost lost belief in the way that they had been successful.
But Gary, you said tactically there. I actually think you hit the nail on the head.
Okay.
By saying that, the reason why I say that is because you think of English football when Wenger arrived, and the criticism labelled at English football was often that the idea of tactics in the way we think of teams in Europe playing, say the great Italian teams or say a Barcelona side, English teams didn't really give the impression that tactics were top of the agenda in terms of how you win football matches and you think through a football match. They often, you know, is, I suppose it's a stereotypical thing to say, but it'd often be about the passion, the determination of the individual, how hard they want to run in the game, how much effort they want to put in, how committed are they, and how good are the players. When Wenger came in, he brought in players of a technical quality better than most of the players in the Premier League. But by the time of 04-05, teams like Man United and especially Chelsea had players just as good, if not better, than the players that Arsenal had. So then what does it come down to when you've got top-class players on the pitch and they are top-level professionals? It does come down to elements of determination and how much, inverted commas, effort they're putting in, as fans would say. But it also is about the tactical nous of the coach. How much is he prepared to tinker, or I shouldn't say tinker, actually, thinking of the guy who came before Mourinho, but how much he is prepared to affect the course of the game with his decisions. I think Wenger always gave the impression, just watching a football match, that he would send his team out there to express themselves on the pitch. And when things started going wrong, he didn't necessarily have the answers. And as years wore on, Arsenal were on the end of some heavy defeats to some top teams, to the extent where they were getting beaten by top teams more than the weaker sides in the Premier League were, because they weren't prepared to keep it tight or to defer to the opposition that they were the weaker side. They just weren't prepared to do that. So if they faced that Jose Mourinho Chelsea side, he would probably go out there and say to the players, go out there and express yourselves. You've got the quality to win this game. And what Mourinho would often do is he would almost treat a lot of his players as if he didn't rate them in many ways. He'd almost say to them, this is what I want you to do in the game. If you do this, we'll remain strong defensively. And if we remain strong defensively, we've got the quality up front to score at least once in a game, and that will be enough to win the game. And that Chelsea side, I know this podcast isn't about Chelsea, but that Chelsea side, the season after Arsenal's win, almost was a turning point for the Premier League in itself, because they were so good defensively and they won games, often 1-0, a lot of games 1-0 from memory, and often they'd win games through an unbelievable piece of skill from, say, Robben, or just the force of nature that they had in front forward areas like Lampard and Drogba. But the defensive platform of that side, with Carvalho and Terry and Makélélé in front of them, it set a template of how you win league titles. And Man United even copied that. You know, they built a strong foundation of goalkeeper, defenders, and a midfield base. Once you've got that, then you can go on from there. But I don't think Arsenal ever thought that way. They kept adding attacking flair to the squad year after year after year. But it, as has been proven, how many teams win league titles by pure attacking flair? Even City are finding it tough now. You need to have that base at the back. And that is the start, beginning of the end for Arsenal, for me, is the fact that they just didn't invest, or I know they were struggling to invest, or didn't use their defence as the base to somehow stay relevant in a title race. They just thought, we can go out there and outplay teams, and there were teams that were better.
I think that's true, Seb. But I think there's the issue for me as a non-Arsenal fan is that the Arsenal team after 2003-04 and certainly the 3 or 4 years afterwards lacked belief. Conviction that they could win games in the big games, the games that decided the league title, the games that decided Champions League, the games that decided FA Cups. It wasn't a matter of, as a guy who's been watching English football since 1960, I suppose, I'm loath to criticise Wenger's tactical acumen, because I think he was been a massive influence on English football. But I just think the main issue with the Arsenal team was, and yes, they did suffer financially against the Man United, Chelsea clubs of that era, and they did suffer perhaps not having the better players. But it seemed to me that the main issue they had was a lack of belief, a lack of conviction, a lack of appreciation that they could, they should, and they would win the big games.
There were marks of that actually in that 03-04 season, because they didn't actually, in a lot of the big games, they didn't batter any of the big teams. They didn't have that statement win over any of the big teams. They had that big win over Liverpool after they'd had the two cup exits when they were losing twice at Highbury and they came back to win 4-2. But the big wins they had in that season were mostly against the lower sides in the table. And they actually scraped a lot of victories. You know, Chelsea, I think there were a couple of 2-1s. Spurs, they beat 2-1 at home. United, they drew twice. The big games they won in that season were by narrow margins. So they were almost in a weird... For a side that, as I said, had a good defence in that particular season, relatively, they weren't... They never blew away a big team. And that also proved in the Champions League as well, is that they were fallible even in that unbeaten season. So the signs were even there, even in that historic moment that it is, the signs were there that they were on the slippery slope to being slightly irrelevant when it came to who was going to win the league in a season.
Yeah, it's a fair call. I absolutely agree. As I say, after not necessarily the first season afterwards, but certainly 2 or 3 seasons afterwards, Arsenal were always perceived as being, I won't say emotionally weak, but sort of psychologically weak, and they're to be taken.
It's the story, it's fascinating as well, how almost Chelsea are quite, seem to be quite sort of bound up in this story as well. But just a quick question, I suppose, it's going to link on to, I suppose ultimately, Wenger's legacy. But, when, if you're talking about fragility and, the sort of the decline of this team, how much, for you, Seb, how much responsibility does Wenger bear for this?
For their perceived decline, you mean?
Yeah.
It's a tricky one, isn't it? I think it's the case of a man who'd done so much for the club, or has done so much for the club. People talk about the departure of David Dean, who did so much to bring him to the club. But I feel that Wenger, because he does done so much for the club, and this happens, in so many different institutions around the world, is that somebody who's done so much, it's almost difficult for anybody to come in and argue with him. And even in the change of ownership, in the way Arsenal ended up with the Kroenkes and everything like that, is that they aren't owners that are there to almost throw their egos all over the club. They're very quiet owners, unassuming. I mean, I'm sure they're ruthless behind the scenes, but it wasn't about them when they came in necessarily. Wenger became Arsenal for a long period of time. And on a world level, Arsene Wenger and Arsenal were interchangeable as a brand almost. So what can you do as a club? You know, if you're working at the club and you see things going wrong, and who's the person to say to change it? Because the fear was always that if Wenger was to go, would Arsenal completely fall off the cliff? You know, they're hanging on by their fingernails, but you remove Wenger and do they just fall into the ocean? That was the fear. Think of all the sides around that time who dropped off a relative cliff in many ways, like a Leeds United, or sides that left the league, or even think of like Newcastle competing for titles. They became something of a yo-yo club. They went down, they came up, they went down. So I don't think Arsenal wanted to ever be in that position. And so that was the fear. And so they went along with the man who'd done so much for the club. And it's almost impossible to know whether if they'd let Wenger go earlier, whether they would have been able to challenge for titles again. Because it was clear the club weren't going out and spending a lot of money on players. They were keen to keep it in the club. They were keen to be perceived as a club who were prepared to hold or, you know, be financially responsible. But my only quote on the idea of being financially responsible is that football, even though it's perceived as big business, it's not really big business in the way that we understand big business. Football clubs operate on the idea of, if you're a club who's in it to make profit, you're not going to win things. You're not going to be challenging for titles. It's just not going to happen, because the best players want to be paid big wages and they'll go to whoever is paying those big wages. So you will not have the best players at your club. You'll have developing players who you then have to sell. And that's what started to happen to Arsenal. And when Man City got their money, who was the first club they turned to pick players off? It was Arsenal, because they knew Arsenal had quality young players that they could tempt away, because not only could they pay bigger wages, but they were also more likely to win trophies. So he performed miracles in a way, Wenger, by keeping Arsenal just about in the frame in Europe. And then they didn't have that dramatic fall that we've seen the other sides who've won titles have. They didn't become a yo-yo side. They basically just came off that gold medal position and were just hanging around the podium for 10 years, basically, which is an achievement in itself. So it's such a difficult debate, and people, yeah, the whole Wenger in and out situation. I think after a season and a bit of Emery, I think people were crying for Arsene back. So now it's all about hope with football fans. Now very much people are positive because the fact that Arsenal won the FA Cup and Arteta seems to have a bit of nous about him. But they still finished in their lowest league position since, you know, top of their 94 or something, when they finished 12th. 94, 95, I think. But they still finished in the lowest position for closing in on, you know, sort of 25 years. But crazy. I think it just shows what Wenger achieved. He will be remembered as time goes on as a legend, not just for Arsenal fans, but, you know, a legend of the English game. And his trophy haul does stack up. You know, all those FA Cups, they are worth something. But I think because Arsenal achieved that unique feat, I think that is always the marker for him. Because he reached that high level, that's what he is judged against for those who have a slightly negative opinion of him. They're almost beating him with his own stick, as in, it's almost like, look, you did this before, why can't you do it now? And that's basically, I think he's just the victim of his own success near the end. Maybe if he'd been a bit average at the beginning and then ended his career with an unbeaten season, I think it might have been different. You think of, look at Ferguson, for example. You know, Sir Alex Ferguson, how long did it take to win the league title with Man United? And then he ended on a high as well. So it's whatever we remember people, maybe Mourinho, it will go down the same path as Wenger in terms of his career may peter out over time. He doesn't win anything for a long time. And then people just sort of think, you know, what's this guy about? The newer generation.
It's funny when you mentioned Ferguson there, because I was going to ask Stephen as well, because obviously, you know, football is, you know, seems to be very, you know, cyclical. There's very similar stories that happen generation upon generation. And obviously Liverpool, you know, you had that boot room tradition, and sort of through Shankly almost to Dalgleish, they got that, not the moving on of the managers, but the managers either left or the replacements were almost seamless. You know, for Liverpool, it was, you know, more or less two, nearly three decades of seamless transition. And yet, the modern era, you look at Wenger's time at Arsenal and Ferguson's time at Manchester United, you know, nearly a quarter of a century, you know, both of them with the clubs respectively. And yet, it's been so... I mean, Arsenal are still not as far down the road as Manchester United are with replacing Wenger. But, you know, Stephen, it seems to be such an incredible shift when, you know, when somebody has dominated at a club for so long, with the right reasons, wrong reasons, you know, through success or, you know, or declining success, it just seems they found it so difficult to move on from that era and that dynasty.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I think with Wenger, obviously not being an Arsenal fan, but watching from the outside looking in, there was a great deal of relief that it was finally over amongst a huge amount of Arsenal fans. But then kicks in the reality of the void that is left behind. And Unai Emery struggled to replace him, and he was soon gone. And now they've turned to Mikel Arteta, where the hope is that, you know, Pep Guardiola has rubbed off on him, and they're going to get, you know, Pep Light, you know, as such, or Diet Pep, you know, if you want. Laughing at my own shite joke there.
I liked it.
But, it was good.
I'll run with that one. I'll keep that one. But no, it does, because you can point to, say, like Brian Clough, for instance. You know, he at the other end of the spectrum left Nottingham Forest by sending them back down where he took them on. But, you know, they still kind of struggled in his absence, even though they came back, you know, won promotion, but then they were soon down again. And it is hard to replace an icon like that. You know, you only have to look at Manchester United, and what are we now, 7 years on from Ferguson's departure, and they have just bumbled along, basically. They've tried to fill the void in all sorts of different manners. They've gone for a David Moyes, and it to have been the wrong move from the start. They've tried another disciplinarian tactician in Van Gaal, but Van Gaal's kind of like 15 years behind his best. They've then gone for Mourinho, who's probably the man they should have given the job to when Ferguson went. But then he's reached his point where, yes, he is vaguely yesterday's man. So they've kind of like stumbled from one, you know, error to another almost. So it is, you know, a near impossibility to replace these icons. You know, you can go back again to another visage of Manchester United when Busby proved impossible to replace, to the point that Manchester United were relegated in 1974. You know, it is, you know, a huge, huge ask to replace someone who has been so omnipresent. You know, you can state that Liverpool dynasty of 30-odd years of continuity, but that is something that's utterly unique to English football. There is no other instance of that happening. You know, there is no other, not from Liverpool or any other club. You know, they've tried it, but it just simply does not work. That was just a unique occurrence of its era. You know, that can never be repeated now. You're never going to get that, you know, sense of progression, of passing the baton down. Barcelona is perhaps the closest you'll ever come, in that the the teachings of Cruyff remain no matter who the coach seems to be. You know, they don't veer away from those Cruyffian rules that were set down in stone, who he himself picked them up from Rinus Michels. You know, the Arsenal can't do that. You know, Manchester United can't do that. And yeah, you know, all those years later, for Wenger to eventually go, you know, the longest goodbye in football, feasibly. Yeah, it just leaves Arsenal with this imponderable, you know, conundrum to crack.
It's, I mean, again, you know, I'm sorry, Gary, I come to you, and the guys here are talking about, you know, this dynasty by these two managers, and then, you know, and you come across to Chelsea, and, you know, Mourinho's been there more than once, but it, you know, at Chelsea, it's almost the complete opposite. And, you know, do you ever, or have you ever as a Chelsea fan, wished for more stability, managers to be given longer? You know, have you, you know, has there been a manager at Chelsea whereby you think, oh, you know, if only he was still there, or if we'd given him more time? I mean, you know, in the era that we're talking from here, from 2000 onwards, there's certainly plenty of managers you can pick from that you might have liked to have stayed. But how does it feel almost to have the opposite problem?
That's a good question. You do this, don't you? I guess two managers I'd say would be Gus Hiddink, who took over as a temporary manager and was massively successful. And the other one would be Carlo Ancelotti, who was won the double and then it fell apart the following season. But, I mean, I would just say about Wenger. to me, Wenger is perhaps the most influential manager of non-British manager in English football of recent times. I wrote a piece about when he left Arsenal, and I channeled my inner Marcel Proust. Pull a quote out from Proust's book, A la Chercheur, Tom Perdu, the sort of times of things forgotten. And it's roughly translated, says that he sat there sadly as their love drifted apart. And I just imagined Wenger sitting on the bench with all the Wenger out banners being held up by Arsenal fans, which I just think was a terrible indictment. Where would Arsenal have been if Wenger hadn't been appointed by David Dean? You know, sometimes you shouldn't wish for these things, because Arsenal would not have had the success Arsenal had without Arsene Wenger. So, you know, yes, not only the success, but also the sort of continued, the long-term success. Chelsea don't have managers for more than 2 or 3 years, and that worked, win trophies, I'm not knocking that. If Arsene Wenger had come to Chelsea, I'd have been pretty pleased with that.
in which year?
I tell you what, Seb. I mean, you know, pick your year, mate. But not sort of the later 2007, 2008, but certainly, you know, in the early years. Yeah, I mean, because he was a revolutionary manager. And he did massively well for us. And I say, you know, so as an Arsenal fan, Seb, I want to ask you the question: where do you perceive Arsenal as being if Wenger hadn't been plucked away from the Japanese league to take over at Highbury?
I think what we haven't mentioned is that what Wenger had done before he was at Arsenal. Obviously, when he was, you know, taken from Japan, of people were asking, who is Arsene Wenger? But what he achieved at Monaco was pretty impressive in itself. And in many ways, if it wasn't for, inverted commas, dodgy Marseille, he would have won a lot more in France. I mean, that's the case. And there is, I think Wenger has always had this idea of purity, hasn't he? Of winning football in the perfect way and operating a club in a perfect way. And I think that's still with Arsenal now, is that they want to be perceived as a proper business and everything else. But to go back to your question, I always think back to when Arsenal came and the management structure at that time with Bruce Rioch in there and Stuart Houston in there, in that gap after the way George Graham had left. I mean, the way Arsenal was then and the way it was when Wenger left, I mean, it is, you might as well be talking about, it almost felt like two different sports, really. I mean, what was going on in Arsenal at that time, the culture of players, their behaviour away from the pitch, the football on the pitch, even though they were in a sort of state of flux at that point in time anyway. I mean, they had won the league a few seasons earlier, but at that point in time, in the early days of the Premier League, they were becoming a bit of a middling team, really, almost what they are now. But the cups were their friend. But if he hadn't come, I suppose you could say Arsenal would have just gone about their business in the same way as maybe a lot of other teams in the league. You say Spurs, Everton. Who's to say that their fate might not have gone the way of Villa or Leeds, for example? We just don't know. It's really hypothetical, but what Wenger did is almost such a unique moment. I mean, I just off the top of my head, there's not really even a comparison of anybody else I can think of who's come into a club and from day one has completely revolutionised the club, their whole approach, the way they go about everything, the way they recruit players, the way they play on the pitch, and kept that for such a long period of time with him still as manager. I just don't think there's a comparison, is there? I mean, if you could tell me, I mean, we might make the joke that Bielsa could do that at Leeds. but this is all hypothetical in terms of, you know, you need to play out the time. And Bielsa is a very experienced manager already. But Wenger to come in to be at Arsenal for the length of time he has, to take them down a completely different path and to keep his job in that entire time, we will never see it again. We just will never see it again. Just by the nature of the way the world has changed. It's just things that happen in football, we can almost guarantee, well, you can't always guarantee, but we can almost say it's going to be a long time before something like that happens again, that an Arsene Wenger comes in and completely changes a culture in a football club. And that the supporters, because he was successful at the beginning, I think that's the key point, the supporters just get swept along with it. Supporters love tradition and they love their club's tradition, but if it involves you winning trophies, supporters quickly forget that. And then you've got that bargaining chip. And then after that, you can start to, you know, impose yourself. And I think, you know, there was an element of he's on borrowed time, but he had been there a long, long time. I mean, it's an impressive stint of time. And the fact that he almost had a second win by winning cups near the end of his reign, I think that helped massively, because it almost, we get those images at the end of Wenger lifting trophies for Arsenal. And I think that's an understated point in time. People might belittle the FA Cup now, but it's going to be worth a lot when we look back on his reign at Arsenal.
I think it's, I mean, look, guys, we're an hour and 20 in already. And I'm sure we could talk for another hour and 20. It's, you know, there's still, I mean, I still have so many, this might need to be a two-parter. But in terms of, I'll come to you actually first for this one, Seb. You know, in terms of the direction of Arsenal now, you know, a very, you know, if you're looking for a blueprint for a club to be run correctly, not how football clubs are run, because as you said, they are two completely different things. But in terms of, you know, a very stable club, they've got Arteta in there, and you know, and as Stephen said, it's, you know, he will have learned a lot under Guardiola. I mean, Are they in probably the best position that they could be in based on what's happened, obviously Wenger's legacy, what happened with Unai Emery, you know, having Arteta, having him working under Guardiola, financially sound and secure, new stadium, you know, are they in the best position now to try and gain a little bit of ground on Liverpool and Manchester City?
No. But
Stephen, what do you think?
I would say that the two positives at Arsenal, and for me, they are in terms of reasons to be happy as a football club, I suppose. I think Arteta is a very talented manager. That is quite clear. And he's done things in this short period of time, which suggest that he's on the right track, and the fact that Arsenal, after all these, you know, the whole time Wenger was there, they struggled to get players into the first team through the youth system, and there's a lot of young players coming through, but they're not the only club doing that. And also, having a lot of young players in your team is a sign that you've fallen off the pedestal a little bit, because you're not bringing in top-class talent to block their path. So it's quite clear that they've got a pathway into the first team because there's just not enough good players to stop them breaking through. So I would say the problem, many problems Arsenal have, is that they are a very well-run club, seemingly from a financial point of view. But like I mentioned before, that doesn't win you trophies. And there are so many other good teams, or so many other teams in a strong financial position in terms of being able to spend money in the Premier League, that Arsenal can even be, they are actually a lot of the time signing players off their reputation as a club. So in France, they've got a huge reputation. In Africa, they've got a huge reputation. They're probably one of the most biggest supported clubs in West Africa. So any players coming through the French system, or even coming through Belgian system, they will see Arsenal as their the target, the place to be. And that will help them sign a lot of players. But besides that, I think most of the other big names or big players around Europe will look at other teams in the Premier League and think, okay, who's going to pay me more? And almost every club in the Premier League could probably match Arsenal for wages, maybe not in terms of paying their best player that money, but in getting a player into the club, they have to compete. They have to be able to compete with everybody else in the league. And what else are Arsenal offering to the best players to come and play for them, except almost that style and that feeling, that perception that they are a classy club per se? But this has all been built on Wenger, really. And a lot of their reputation is still built on what Wenger's done for the club. So they're in a very difficult position in that they won't be challenging for the title anytime soon because they just cannot bring in the quality necessary. They're just not in a position to do it. They can't pay the transfer fees and they can't pay the wages. It's quite clear that they won't break the bank for players. And their biggest thing now is keeping hold of the good players that they have. And they have a good way of always making their fans interested in them signing players, and they seem to be linked with every player on the planet every transfer window. But I just think, in terms of positivity, the positive that they have is that they have a talented manager. But I just, from looking at it in from an almost neutral point of view, I just think you look at other clubs in the league and you just see more excitement, you see more potential. I'd even suggest, I know it might be sacrilege to say to some Arsenal fans, but I'm going to suggest I'd be more excited about the direction Spurs might be going next season. Just because you feel like Mourinho's starting to know his side and they might have some durability and you feel they might go out and make a big signing. You just feel that's more likely to happen with them. Whereas for Arsenal, they're having to do deals, get players in and out here and there. And to summarise, really, without trying to end it on a downer, but it seems like the one positive is Arteta. And if they can keep hold of him and trust in him, then that is the thing that will make Arsenal feel positive about the near future. But as far as them winning league titles, it has to be a change in the club's policy. They have to be a bit more bullish in the transfer market and overpay for people, because that's the way they're going to win. Because even if they bring good players through, they're not in a position to hold on to them. So they've got themselves in an awkward scenario. But to summarise, to say almost my last point, you know, you guys have spoken about dynasties and teams not being able to stay at the top. But I think what we love about English football is that there is that topsy-turvy nature of it. And you think of the situation around Europe now with Bayern, Juventus. I know Barcelona have just dropped off, but it's only Real Madrid taking over from them. And now PSG in France, those other big leagues, there seem to be foregone conclusions, it seems, with relentless title wins for the big clubs. Whereas our league in England, you feel, even though we've got some big clubs, we seem to have a bigger collection of clubs who are able to chop and change. You know, four seasons ago, we never would have perceived that Liverpool would do what they've done this season. And yet, here we are.
I mean, I think that's a great point. You know, you look at, I mean, I can remember growing up, you know, looking at the Liverpool size that Steve was talking about, and you can't even begin to see how it would ever end. And then all of a sudden, they go that 30-year wait, and you know, it gets to Manchester United, and you think, nope, it'll never end. It'll just, but it does end. You're right. You know, these things do end, and it, you know, I suppose we're just starting or at the beginning of potentially of a Manchester City and Liverpool one, and you think, how is anybody else ever going to catch them? But sure is, you know, it will. It will happen. Stephen, you know, sort of final words, I guess. You know, there's lots to summarise here. But Arteta, lot of potential. I think, personally, he's at a club that will have probably more patience than other clubs with him, I guess. And he'll probably get more time at Arsenal than anywhere else.
Yeah, I think he's in a position where he can try and build, you know, something that's ideological almost. He can kind of like take a little bit of what he's learned under Guardiola. He can take a little bit of what Wenger has bestowed upon him with the club that he's inherited. You know, he played under Wenger, so he has all of that going for him. And yes, money does, you know, buy the title, but you know, I can point to, you know, the way that Liverpool have done it. Yeah, we spent huge on Alisson. Yes, we spent huge on Van Dijk. But we sold Coutinho to do that. You know, if you look at the net spend of this Liverpool side, it is insanely small for what they've done. And the trick with that is to build something up from the start. You know, it takes a spark, and you've got to be able to add compelling and to take chances on players. You know, it is about being that little bit clever. It's not about going for the shop bought players. It's about coming up with a system and an idea that players buy into. You know, I had a discussion with a friend of mine called Trevor Downey this afternoon, and saying that what Jurgen Klopp has basically done is he's kind of sold an image of Liverpool where players have to kind of believe in Christmas almost. And that's what he's done. And he's set an example, you know, to other clubs who don't have the biggest checkbooks to say, well, look, you know, with hard work and a vision, you can actually do it. You know, there's a long way for Arsenal to come back, but I'm interested, very interested to see what they do next season. And I have a little inkling that they'll make a step in the right direction. You know, they're not going to be anywhere near winning a league title. But when you look at them, all they can do is kind of plot themselves at the minute. If you're going to take Liverpool and Manchester City out of the equation at the minute, then what are they left with? And that's a case of dueling with Chelsea, who have, you know, a relatively inexperienced coach in Frank Lampard, dueling with Manchester United with what is still widely seen as a suspect manager in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, dueling with, you know, across North London with Jose Mourinho, who, you know, many people are turning around and saying is yesterday's man. So, you know, there is a landscape there. There is an environment with which to be competitive and to kind of put themselves above the rest. That would be their target next season. You know, to say, let's be the third best team in the English Premier League and see, you know, if we can do even better than that.
It's, I mean, Gary, you know, as Stephen's mentioned there, you know, final word with you, but is that, you know, is it going to be a question of almost baby steps for Arsenal now? It's about, you know, can they consistently get into that top four? You know, Seb's mentioned Tottenham, you know, Tottenham, Chelsea, Arsenal seems to be the next sort of tier that sits below, you know, Manchester United perhaps with Solskjaer there. You know, those four currently sit below Liverpool and Manchester City. So I guess it's, you know, it's about becoming the best of that group before you can then go on to challenge the current big two.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, the old fabled top four has been almost become a top six or seven. So if you're going to get a top four, you've got to get above those six or seven. And you know, will Arteta be successful? It all depends how you define success. Will he win a league title for the next 2 or 3 years? Not a prayer. I mean, Seb's absolutely, you know, he's astute and he's correct. Will they win trophies? Quite possibly. You know, they won the FA Cup on merit, to beat Chelsea on merit in this season's FA Cup. I think so. So I think it depends how you define success. I think, you know, it's really, if football teaches anything, it's that nothing is forever. You know, I'm sort of old enough to remember football from the early 60s. You know, I remember when Liverpool were a mediocre second division team before Shankly arrived there. You know, and Man United were, hadn't won the title God knows how many years before Ferguson turned up, and before Arsenal had Wenger and Blackburn, before the money turned up, and before Chelsea, before the money turned up. Nothing's forever. Things change. And who knows how the football will look in 2 or 3 years. I think Arsenal have got the ideal manager in Mikel Arteta. He's versed in the traditions of the club, and he's been a great teacher and apprenticeship under Guardiola. I think he'll do really well. And I think Arsenal, the sort of club that will give him time to mature and develop his team and succeed. It's really difficult to say how successful they will be, because who knows what will happen? Because, you know, the one thing you can predict about football is you can't predict anything about football. But you know, that's football. And, you know, as we were sort of talking about this situation tonight, Arsenal went an entire league season undefeated in 2003-2004 season, and then fell away massively. So who can predict football?
Guys, it's been, you know, I think this is arguably our longest podcast. It's been brilliant. Absolutely, you know, absolutely fascinating stuff. You know, hopefully people are still listening, and it's flown by for them as well. Seb, you know, as always, a pleasure. You know, thank you so much for coming on and putting us straight, really, with regards to the decline of Arsenal.
I can't believe at no point was it mentioned about Van Nistelrooy and the Martin Keown star jump in front of his face.
Please feel free to just throw that in. We'll do a director's cut for Christmas. You can mention that marriage, come on.
That is almost the most famous moment from that season, probably even more famous than them winning it at White Hart Lane. But it's a pleasure. Been a pleasure to be on. I think the Arsenal team will be forever remembered, whatever happens. Even, you know, every year it's almost celebrated. Every time each team has lost at least one game, every team in the league has lost one game, I think Arsenal fans celebrate it like a key moment in the season, you know, buying Troy Deeney and Saar T-shirts the day after. And I think that's what it's become almost. And I think that's a special thing for football fans, because every football fan, if their club hasn't won anything for a while, they hold on to those moments in the past when things did happen for them. So I think that's just part of football fandom. And thanks for having me on.
A pleasure. And like I say, absolutely any time. Stephen, a great night, yeah?
Oh, that's been fantastic. Yeah, absolutely brilliant podcast. And yeah, thanks for coming on, Seb. You've been brilliant again.
And obviously, Gary, from the Chelsea perspective, it really couldn't have worked out. It couldn't have worked out any better.
No, that's right. And it's interesting that Seb sort of just flagged it up at the end, you know, and a piece of the action, shall we say.
Oh, I'll tell you what.
Talking about football with a glass of wine is my favourite way of spending an evening. So well done, guys. Thank you.
Brilliant. Obviously, all that's left, you know, is for me to say, you know, thank everyone for listening. Please join us again, whether it's another end of an era, whether we're in the centre circle, whether it's on our YouTube channel. You know, please join us again next time on the Lob Podcast with These Football Times. Thank you and goodbye.
Many thanks for joining us today on the Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists, and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.